This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You have reached Pals the African Podcast, brought to you by Africa Files in collaboration with the Rabble Podcast Network. Please listen to the message after the beep.
The ravaging of Africa has been enriching Europe and North America for more than 500 years.
First, European empires imposed slavery and colonialism on the continent.
After 1945, the United States took over as the dominant neocolonial power.
Through the Pentagon and the CIA, the U.S. government has fueled 14 wars in Africa.
It is American invasion, but the U.S. role is everything.
The U.S. has used the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to systematically demolish African economies and health and education sectors.
Par les stratégies de la Banque mondiale, les pauvres seront toujours pauvres, les riches seront toujours riches.
This military and economic war enables the looting of Africa's resources by Western multinational corporations.
Shell is into the politics of Nigeria, you know. We might say we have our independence, but economically, we are still being colonized.
Washington's genocidal imperial strategy has killed more than 26 million Africans, but failed to suppress popular resistance.
We have refused to die. We are living for Africa. No matter what they do, no matter what power they have.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Pulse, the African podcast, brought to you by Africa Files in association with the Rabble Podcast Network. That was just a clip there from The Ravaging of Africa, a four-part radio documentary series written by Asad Ismi and produced by Christine Schwartz. The four-part series looks at the destructive impact of imperialism on Africa. But because of time restrictions, we will only feature one or two parts of that series. What we are featuring today is the first part of Militarizing Africa, which looks at the devastating war in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which, as you probably know, has been described as Africa's first world war because it drew in more than seven African armies. Now, featured African activists such as Mfuni Kazadi, Millicent Okumu, Farah Malim, and Halima Abdi Arush. Recording for this series took place at the 2007 World Social Forum in Nairobi, Kenya.
You get riled up by mainstream media? Does the right wing make you want to raise a ruckus? Then Rabble is the place for you. Rabble.ca and the Rabble Podcast Network are launching our yearly membership campaign. We need your support to make sure that we can keep raising a ruckus with our independent news and podcasts. Go to Rabble.ca to find out what rewards are in store for new members. We've got DVDs, books, magazine subscriptions, and more fun giveaways to thank you for supporting Canada's most rabble-rousing independent news site, Rabble.ca.
Nearly 80% of the strategic minerals the United States requires are found in Africa, including 90% of the world's cobalt, 90% of the platinum, 40% of the gold, 98% of the chromium, 64% of the manganese, and one-third of the uranium. These minerals are needed to make jet engines, cars, missiles, electronic components, iron, and steel. No industrial society can exist without these substances. Africa also accounts for 18% of U.S. oil imports, a number which is expected to rise.
Africa is the most war-torn region in the world, with armed conflicts going on in nine countries: Democratic Republic of the Congo, Sudan, Ethiopia with Somalia, civil war in Ethiopia, Uganda, Chad, Nigeria, Morocco with Western Sahara, and Algeria. The U.S. has provided arms and military training to participants in all of these 9 wars. Washington has done the same in another 5 wars that ended during 2002 to 2006. These are the long civil wars in Angola, Sierra Leone, Burundi, and Liberia, as well as that in Congo-Brazzaville.
According to William Hartung, co-author of the report Deadly Legacy, U.S. Arms to Africa and the Congo War, the U.S. sent $1.5 billion in arms and training to Africa during the Cold War years, 1950 to 1989. This, quote, set the stage for the current round of conflicts in the region, unquote. He further points out that, quote, the military skills and equipment supplied by the United States are still being used by combatants in these wars, unquote.
Following the end of the Cold War, the Clinton administration undertook a wave of new military training programs in Africa. In the 1990s, the U.S. gave military assistance to 50 countries in Africa out of a total of 53. The U.S. has 4 different military training programs for Africa.
Since 2001, the Bush administration has doubled U.S. military aid to Africa and quadrupled U.S. arms transfers. In February 2007, Bush set up a new Pentagon command for Africa called AFRICOM. It is headquartered at the huge U.S. military base at Djibouti in the Horn of Africa, close to Saudi Arabia and Yemen. The base houses 2,000 U.S. troops, mainly special forces, as well as CIA operatives. Given its strategic location, AFRICOM's purpose appears to be control of African and Middle Eastern oil.
The most destructive case of U.S. military intervention in Africa is the war in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the heart of the continent. The war has killed more than 4 million people since 1998 and destroyed the second largest country in Africa. The Congo is the richest country in the continent, holding the world's biggest copper, cobalt, and cadmium deposits. The U.S.'s proxies for this genocide are Rwanda and Uganda, which started the war in 1998 by invading the Congo with Washington's encouragement and support, and have since been looting the country's resources and sending them to the West. Oxfam called this war the world's biggest humanitarian disaster.
Angola, Zimbabwe, and Namibia sent their armies to support the Congo government, and Burundi joined the other side. Thus began Africa's first world war, involving 7 armies, which has further wrecked a country crushed by more than a century of Western domination. The U.S. has given arms and military training to all 7 armies.
Rwanda and Uganda are the U.S.'s staunchest allies in the region, and Washington backed the invasion of the Congo, according to Human Rights Watch. Uganda received $1.5 million in U.S. arms and military training in 1999. U.S. Special Forces have trained the Rwandan army in counterinsurgency, combat, and psychological operations. This included instructions about fighting in the Congo. To keep the war going, the U.S. has helped the other side too, with Zimbabwe getting $1.4 million in U.S. military training in 2000 and Namibia $500,000.
Mfuni Kazadi is from the Congo and is Secretary General of the group Coalition for the Cancellation of the Illegitimate Deaths of the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
And when the war started, they were ships of American at Mwanda. I tell you, it is confirmed by the Angolese. And that ships, its mission was to gather all the communication for Uganda's and Rwanda's army, which were in Mwanda and Kitona. You see, so it is confirmed. And also, when the war were going on, the American were part of the problem, because their authorities said that the Congo is too big, must be divided into 4 stages. If the Congolese, if they can't find any solution to the war, so the Congo must be divided. So the resistance of people, that is why the resistance of people have caused 4 and 2 million people dead.
So you see that the Rwandese were used like a puppet. They put them in face to fight for the interests of the United States.
Under a peace deal signed in 2002, Rwanda and Uganda formally withdrew their forces from the Congo. But fighting continues in the eastern part of the country, with Rwanda and Uganda using proxy forces to control territory and continue the looting. The United Nations has identified 85 foreign multinational corporations based in the US, Europe, and South Africa that have been looting the resources of the Congo as the war has raged. Those include the big diamond company De Beers, the mining giant Anglo American, Barclays Bank, Bayer AG, Cabot Corporation, and the Canadian mining companies Barrick Gold and Banro.
In an example of organized crime, many companies have funded military operations, thus perpetuating the war. The Congo War is a horrifying example of all three instruments used by the U.S. in its attempt to dominate Africa: military invasion, World Bank IMF economic control, and Western corporate plunder.
All the looting material have been transferred, have been exported to the United States for nothing, you see. So the Congolese have lost everything.
And there was only The Hague last year who condemned Uganda to pay $10 billion. But they said we have no power to oblige Uganda to pay that amount. So that we say, if they have condemned Uganda, Rwanda should be also condemned because they were a party of the invasion. Why Rwanda should get away from that tribunal?
The Congo War has displaced more than 3 million people, forcing many of them to flee to other countries. Women have been particularly affected by the war. Rape has been used so widely as a weapon in the war that doctors cannot believe its extent. It's estimated that 250,000 women have been raped by combatants, the victims ranging from a 2-year-old to a 70-year-old. About one-third of rape victims have contracted HIV and AIDS. Millicent Okumu is secretary of the Federation of Congolese Abroad, an international organization with branches in the Congo and 11 other countries that provides resettlement services to expatriate Congolese. The Federation also contributes to reconstruction efforts inside the Congo, including raising funds for hospital supplies.
The burden on the war falls on a woman because the woman is in charge of the children, is in charge of everything in the house, in the home. So when a woman cannot run away and leave the kids, you have to struggle that you protect your children. The women are the most suffering people. Many women and girls are victims of rape. So it is not something which is a secret. It's well known that women were so much raped, so much traumatized, so much that some of them are affected till now. If it was a girl, he can't allow himself to get involved with a man because of the trauma that she went through. When a woman is raped, maybe you don't know the man had HIV AIDS, you don't know the man has STDs. So if you are raped and you're being infected, now that life has been destroyed. Maybe you're having a... you got pregnant through that rape. That child will be traumatizing you because this is a child that I got out of my will, out of my wish. Now, when you destroy a woman, you're destroying the community, you're destroying the family.
Since 2002, at Washington's insistence, the Congo has been subjected to a World Bank IMF structural adjustment program, which means that its economic policy is being set by these two U.S.-dominated institutions. A major effect of this policy is to legalize the corporate looting of the Congo. Under World Bank rules, foreign companies pay almost nothing to the government for lucrative mining concessions.
What the U.S. says, have done, they also say that you must work with IMF and World Bank. And when the World Bank came, they put in place reform, macroeconomic reform. They have made a new code of investment. In that code of investment, they are saying that if the investor comes, he has the right to repatriate the benefit.
So repatriate all the benefits?
All the benefits, 100%. All the benefits. So now we have lost a lot of mining, rich mining concession, for nothing. You understand? So, who gain? You find that all the company
in the front, in there are United States, Vincent. So this is a very, very systematic policy taken by the United States. Now, they have also made what we call code minier, mineral code. In mineral code, they said the investor can take up to 90% of shares, up 90% of share, and leave only 10% of share to the government. It's not investment. We call it pseudo-investment.
It's blunder.
It's blunder. It's robbery. A robbery. With what are we going to build the Congo as far as the multinational have taken everything?
The objective of the U.S. is to gain control of the economic riches of the Congo. To do this, Washington first used war and genocide, and then the World Bank and the IMF, combined with the threat of a return to a wider war.
The World Bank said, this is the price of the peace. You should give up. You see, you should give up your company. You should give up your concession. This is the price you have to pay for the peace. We are like we are used like slaves. We are just producing. They give you a small amount of money, but all the benefits are taken by transforming the material outside. You understand? I would like to see a Congo where people are in the work working. They produce. And not only producing the primary raw material, but also transform the material in place so that they can sell and get more benefit. Because now, all what we are doing, we are just selling the gross product we gain, so there is no any benefit which came from that. All this raw material are being transformed outside. You understand?
Patrice Lumumba was the first elected leader of the Congo. He served in office for only 2 months. Because of his desire for economic independence, the U.S. had him assassinated in 1961. Washington replaced him with its puppet, Colonel Mobutu, a brutal military dictator who murdered thousands of Congolese and looted the country for 37 years in league with Western multinational corporations. Mobutu's reign continued the plunder and killing begun by Belgium, which colonized the Congo from 1885 to 1960. Lumumba is one of Africa's greatest heroes.
He was killed because of that. He was asking to give the independence, the economic independence. You see, that is the same policy now. If you raise your voice, you will be killed. That was the example to show to the Congolese that if you try to resist us, we are going to do the same as we did with Lumumba.
After 37 years of U.S.-imposed dictatorship and 8 years of a U.S.-backed genocidal war, the Congo is close to becoming the poorest country in the world, with 95% of its population unemployed and subject to chronic malnutrition. Yet it is worth noting that in spite of the catastrophe it has wrought in the Congo, the U.S. has not been able to achieve a major objective, that of balkanizing the country. Washington's military strategy has failed in the Congo because of the fierce resistance of the Congolese people.
So there you have it, a perspective on how U.S. policies has affected Africa, particularly the DRC. It is a very, very sad situation. We've just heard that 95% of the population is unemployed. And the United Nations has identified 85 multinational corporations that they say are looting the Congo. This list actually includes two Canadian mining companies. That's it for today. In the second installment, Ismin and Christian will look at the Somali war and the U.S. involvement. Now, to learn more about Africa Files, please visit www.africafiles.org. My name is Silence Genty, and till next time, stay well.